Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm, we are staying local, and we're trying to sort of bring it all in. Don Moeller has joined me now, former Baltimore County Executive. Don, you did education most of your life before you were County Executive, before you went to work. You had a whole life in education. I want to let you do the honors of bringing in Dr. Santelises, who's a returning visitor here. We call them returning champions. But this has been, for all the challenges of business, and we've gone through that, and challenges through all of the community. We're going to talk to arts people next week. Education is your thing, and it's no surprise that in the early going here, you want to address what's going on for children, for parents, for educators, for administrators. This is as big a mess in the world of education as it is anywhere else.
Well, I think that's well said, Nestor. And before I bring our guest in, I just want to, as always, ask people to remember our sponsors at this difficult time. Our friends at State Fair Restaurant in Catonsville. They've got lunch, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You can call. They'll bring it right to your curbside. Small businesses are hurting. Help them out. Fabley's downtown. Lexington Market closed down. But I spoke to Damie Horn, the owner, yesterday. They are shipping out daily. I went on today, Nestor, ordered a bunch of crab cakes, some crab soup. It'll be here in the next day or two. Support Fadley's and our newest sponsors out there at Moeller and Gary Realtors. Jeff Moeller continuing to show homes via Skype, via Zoom, video tours. They're continuing to do the good work. So give Jeff a call at Moeller and Gary Realtors. I think it is safe to say, Nestor, that our next guest was one of our, you know, we don't like to have favorites. We're like moms and dads. You can't have favorite children. But I think it's safe to say quietly, if nobody is listening, that Dr. Sonia Santelises was one of our favorite guests. She was with us in November, episode 104, 105, 106. Dr. Santelises, welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Oh, thank you, you all. It's great to be back.
Well, last time we got together, we didn't think, well, we'll call you back in the middle of the pandemic when everything's shut. I mean, it has been crazy. Don, I don't know if you know, but I ran into Dr. Santelises literally about 48 hours before the shutdown. We were together at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes event. Don, you and I spoke to Frank Kelly last month, right before the shutdown at Fadley's. It's incredible. It's a Smaltimore thing. But it's incredible how much times can change. You and I were actually fist bumping that night, I think. We were still allowed.
That's right. We were.
Still touch hands. Doctor, I have to tell you, I was thinking today, and Nestor references my career in education. And I know, you know, you have your doctorate from Harvard. And I noticed that the doctorate is in administration, planning, and social policy. Administration, planning, and social policy. And I'm wondering which one of those courses entitled Dealing with a Pandemic. Which course was that at Harvard?
I think that was the second semester of my first year of doctoral study. No, not at all.
Oh, my goodness. So tell us, just take us behind the curtain. What the heck does it feel like? What's going on? How are you trying to keep the Baltimore City public schools running in what truly are unusual times?
Well, and I think, you know, Don and Nestor, we're doing a lot of what a lot of people are doing. We are forecasting based on scenario and, you know, ever-changing information. But I will say, and, you know, Don, you know this in particular, you know, when you're in education, you very quickly have to focus in on kind of what are the main priorities, right? And so immediately we knew with our student population that we were going to be shifting from, you know, keeping buildings clean, and we had those protocols in place. I'd say even through kind of mid-February, late February, but as you know, the world knows now, that quickly shifted. And so our priorities very quickly became making sure our young people got fed and their families, because a lot of our families and students rely on schools for feeding. And that was a huge priority. Communication. We knew and know that communication and connection means a lot during this time, and so we've been putting things in place for that. And then the third was continuity of learning, and we knew that school would not be the same Don, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And Nestor, you know this just as somebody who went to school, right? That being in classrooms and schools with teachers, with principals is not the same as being at home. But the approach that we're taking, and I stated this morning in a virtual meeting with all of our principals throughout Baltimore City Schools, I said, there's two pieces. There's continuity of learning now, which means we are not seeding this, you know, remainder of the year or through April 24th is just lost time. We are going to do what we can to support families and students in continuing learning. But then we also know very realistically that we are going to need to have some kind of educational recovery plan because for a lot of our young people, you know, we know that this is a particularly difficult time and we will need to help fill some of the gaps that are being not only created but further exacerbated because of this pandemic we're all living through.
Well, there is so much there to unpack. My head is actually spinning, and that's why I say, really, in the most sincere way, I tip my hat to each and every one of you who are out there today, the county executives, the governor, the mayors, the school superintendents, the police and fire chiefs, who are, you know, as Governor Cuomo said the other day, this is the time when government has to make it work. For all those folks who occasionally want to poo-poo government doesn't matter, they're finding out right now, this is a time when government has to work. And just the things that you touched on, Dr. Sandley says, let's start with the basic human need, which you alluded to. How many students, again, for folks who don't know, in the Baltimore City Public Schools?
So we are a little bit over 79,000 students.
Okay, so 80,000 students. And your first thought was, how do I feed my boys and girls? So walk us through the thought process from that point to where you actually feel pretty good that you're trying to feed your boys and girls. Give folks a sense of how that happened, how it evolved, and how you made it happen as the boss.
Well, and so first I will say, I sure was leading, but it was the feet of the folks on the ground. And, you know, as you alluded to, Don, you know, it really, the heroes in this story are going to be healthcare workers, are going to be government leaders, and are also in schools, are going to be food service workers and custodians. And I just have to say that with all sincerity. And we were able to very quickly move into what most school districts are prepared to do, because we do need to do it, and that is tap into some of the protocols we already had in place for snow days. Very quickly, we found out this was not 1 or 2 days, of course, but it did enable us to, for example, know how to stand up feeding sites, right, and how many feeding sites, and where were they going to be. And so some of those, having some of that practice in place actually helped inform how we mobilized for, you know, the 2 or 3 days notice that we got that school was going to be shut down that Monday. And I believe it was either Wednesday or Thursday the governor made the official announcement. So we were able to tap into some of those protocols very early. And then as time has gone on, to be quite frank, you know, and this is moving past the date of probably our longest snowstorm since I've lived in Baltimore City, where we are now is really looking at kind of the health of our workers and how do we make sure that they are staying safe? How are we innovating and partnering? So one of the things, again, to your point, Don, that, you know, we've been partnering with Baltimore City Recreation and Parks as an example of another agency, another public agency. And in their 40 recreation centers They have also been providing meals. So, you know, we were taking very early on breakfast and lunch and one snack, and then a lot of the recreation and park facilities were taking snack and dinner. And so it enabled us to give kind of a continuum of feeding. I will also shout out private partners like the University of Maryland Medical System that stepped up and said, you know what, during our spring break, and we did give our folks a breather at spring break, but the University of Maryland Medical System said, we want to be part of the solution. And so they stepped in to help feed young people over weekends. And so, you know, when we stop on Friday, they pick up for elementary school students on the weekends. We partnered with Maryland Food Bank, and we're shifting into more food, shelf-stable food, and, you know, food pantries, bringing them outside. So we're having to shift. I think in all, you know, transparency, the question we're asking now is how do we maintain the safety of our food service workers past, you know, during an extended break. And we've been able to partner with other superintendents across the state. So we're sharing ideas as we all encounter similar challenges in different contexts. That has been very valuable to have colleagues, quite frankly, across the state and the country to be able to lean on. But, you know, the details of everything from, you know, serving hot food first because you know, you want to make sure that's out of the door, all the way to, okay, where's the milk going to come from? And what about the milk in closed schools? We don't want that to spoil, right? So how do we move that out? So it's everything from, you know, what's the food going to be? How are we going to deliver it? At how many sites? How do we keep those sites safe? And then I will say the state, you know, the governor was very supportive in being very clear from the beginning that feeding young people was a priority and making sure food was moving. So it helped in garnering flexibility around some of the USDA regulations that have been waived. So we're able to give families four meals at one time instead of just one at a time. But it's all of those decisions. But I just have to say, I had the benefit of having an amazing food service team, and they used their prior knowledge and have been putting it to work for families. And they really are frontline heroes. I just can't say that enough.
I want to reset here. CEO Sonia Santelis is joining us here from City Schools. Obviously, Don, we've been talking so much and unpacking here, but I just want to cut in and say this part of it. Technology and how you communicate to everyone and the way they get their communication. I mean, I thought we were going to talk about education, and honestly, the first line of everything really is food, right? I mean, not even the schooling or any of that. Food was the first thing on everyone's mind in the beginning, right?
No, it really was, Nestor. It was absolutely food. I mean, and clearly, as educators, yes, we went to learning and we had that in mind, but you're absolutely right, Nestor. And I said to someone else in a different state that one of the silver linings to this pandemic is I think now there has been a renewed understanding and a deeper understanding from the general public of all that public schools are being asked to do, particularly in communities that serve large numbers of students that come from low-income families, under-resourced communities. And, you know, just something like food, and you're right, Nestor, you know, people are like, well, wait, weren't you worried about the textbook first? Actually, no. We were
right.
Worried about making sure kids eat.
Well, that's educational to me, because we're 3 weeks into this, and I wanted to give you and everyone else a chance to breathe before I went and, you know, and said, where are we? Where can you give me an update when literally everyone on the planet's trying to land the plane while it's in the air, right? Like,
that's
and
right.
Fly
that's
it
right.
And figure out how to change it. And we've talked to so many business owners, but, well, you know, we focus today on education. Don, go for it, because I know you got a lot going on, but
well,
I'm still worried about the technology communication part of educating people as to the virus, as I have Purell on my hands because I touched my face a minute ago.
And I think we want to talk about that as well, Nestor. I don't want to leave food just yet. I have one or two quick questions for Dr. Sanalesis, and that is, one of the things I think folks ask in these times is, they give you high marks. They give the school systems high marks. It's like, wow, you guys really have done great work in trying to feed the kids. Then the question becomes, how do kids and families respond? Are they taking advantage of the meals you're providing? And then as a CEO or a superintendent, how do you track whether or not the food is getting into the family's hands?
So those are great questions, Don, and I will say overwhelmingly, you know, there's always fringe, right? I mean, you know, there's in every profession, in every community, unfortunately, human nature is, I'm sure that there are some fringe folks that are taking advantage at the far ends of this. But I will tell you, families have been overwhelmingly thankful. They are coming out with kids. Meals are going to children. We as a school district will not necessarily get reimbursed for meals that go to adults because, again, this is, resource intended for children. But what we have started saying is with some of the philanthropic dollars that we have, we're actually giving parents meals when they come with their kids. And so we're using philanthropic dollars and district dollars to do that because if, you know, you have a grandmother, and this is a real example, Don, of coming out, a grandmother who is raising her three grandchildren, has challenges walking and, you know, made it all the way to one of our school feeding sites. And, you know, yes, we're tracking that we gave her four meals with her three grandchildren who each got four meals. But we are finding other dollars, right, to pay for that, knowing we aren't going to necessarily get reimbursed, but that's a family that is being held intact. And I will tell you, that first week or so in particular, and even now, we saw about, I'd say, an 80% increase in one day. So we came back from spring break.
Wow.
We did not open them. And literally our first day of back feeding, there was an 80% increase. And these are not only, lowest income folks. I think what, you know, we all understand this. For some of these are food vulnerable families too, right? So even if you have someone working two jobs, if one of those jobs is now taken away, you know, just having two meals for your family means now your family budget is only being taxed for one meal a day, right? And so we really are seeing great kind of thankfulness. I would say I'm very comfortable in saying we don't have a lot of exploitation going on. Our food service workers know how to track families. And in the cases of adults that are coming with families, we're just finding out, again, we're using philanthropic dollars to make sure families are whole.
I think, and that really helps understand the issue, I think folks that I've heard from aren't so much worried about the exploitation as they are the flip side. I think they're worried about, are families who need the food, are they aware where to get the food, and are they coming to get the food? That's the question.
Well, that comes back to communication and technology and how you get the word out when people get the word in so many different ways, right?
Yeah. So with that, and that is, as you all know, given that we have broad swaths of our community that does not have access to technology.
Correct.
We're now that we're kind of 2-3 weeks into this, one of the things that we started doing is flagging our vulnerable populations. I know you're going to have an esteemed principal on later. And I will just say, one of the things I said to our principals this morning is you all are actually our eyes and ears into the corners of our communities, right? So we knew in the first level of communication, posting online, robocalls, sending flyers home that last day of school, those kinds of things we did early on, but we always knew, to your point, there are some families that are cut off or far more distant. And so one of the things that, frankly, our school leaders are incredible with, and I said this to them this morning, is you all get to flag who your most vulnerable families are, who you know are living in some of these conditions, who aren't going to know. And those are the ways that we're then deploying volunteers. We have, you know, volunteers from all corners of the city that, you know, people who want to help. And some of the ways that we are getting ready to deploy them is actually following up with our most vulnerable families, our kids, our older students that, frankly, are homeless or have a home situation where they actually aren't home very much. And so right now that we've got some of the other systems up and running, we're now, we really have started turning our focus into some of those most vulnerable, vulnerable families. So no, you're absolutely right. We knew that would be the case. And that kind of one-on-one reaching out is the place that now we're really focusing on.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, we're with Dr. Sonia Santelices, CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools, trying to manage a school system, deliver instruction, feed kids through an unprecedented pandemic. It's interesting, Dr. Santelices, when you speak. What I'm struck by is we hear over and over as we hear individuals discussing this pandemic on the news about the need and the skill set for Army generals in terms of logistics. And the role that you're really playing now as a CEO is indeed that Army general, right, managing the logistics of the entire school system.
No, that's absolutely right. And it is logistics. And, you know, having wonderful folks behind you like chiefs of schools and human capital who are making sure people get paid and all of that really does come into play, but you're right. It's organization, it's deployment, it's need identification. But in the end, you have to have the foot soldiers. You have to have the people that are on the front line. And that was part of why it was important for me to touch base with principals this morning, to let them know that I know.
What's their mindset? I'm going to interrupt you, and I apologize for doing that.
No, don't.
You mentioned having a virtual meeting with 100 and I don't know what, 107, how many principals?
Yeah, we probably have about 160 school leaders.
Yep. 154 yep. leaders. You have this virtual meeting. Share with our listeners, what are you hearing from them? What's their mindset? I watch, as you alluded to, we are going to interview a principal I know quite well, full disclosure, my daughter, Dr.
Yes.
Jennifer Lynch, who's principal at Hillcrest Elementary School in Baltimore County. I've watched her throughout this, and Nestor has watched her because he follows her on Facebook. She, in addition to managing a family, is in constant communication with her 700 or so, the parents of her 700 children, putting out multiple videos a day, connecting with
700 children, right? That's just not 700 children. It's 700 parents, right?
No, more than that, 700.
That's 1,400 parents and grandparents, right, and who knows right. what, right?
Thousands of parents. So my question is, what? Talk to us about the mental state of your principals right now, because I worry about our leaders and the stress they're under.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it absolutely is a challenging time for everybody, particularly, as you noted, for those folks who are holding hundreds of families, hundreds of children, as tightly as they're holding their own, you know, their own personal families. And so one of the things that we have really tried to do is make sure that they have the opportunity to flag issues. Even today, even this morning, I made sure that I left time for questions. I wanted them to be able to ask questions, hear what's on their mind. And for a lot of them, they are concerned about their most vulnerable young people. They are also flagging, you know, kind of some of the bureaucratic thorns that they want to make sure aren't going to kind of bite them or their students, right? So we talked about everything from graduation requirements to what will grading look like to what happens with young people who can't get the packets as early or can't come to pick up their laptop. Their minds, based on their questions, I have to say overwhelmingly were about mitigating negative impacts on their students and helping to support and keep students and families going. And so we really had to, you know, and one of the things, and I have a fabulous chief of schools who has been amazing during this and has also been communicating with them regularly, because we knew, as you noted, communication is imperative at times like this. And one of the things that we've said, and I think is the posture of leadership, quite frankly, is we have to have urgent empathy. We have to be urgent. We have to absolutely move smartly and be able to iterate quickly. But we also have to have empathy. We have to have empathy with our staff. You know, I have school leaders who, frankly, are dealing with their own sick family members, who are worried about elderly parents in New York or New Orleans or Detroit. And they too, are managing the stressors of a pandemic while they are simultaneously leading, as you noted, you know, to calm hundreds of families. So this urgent empathy, this emphasis on relationships and connections, and then using those two kind of driving forces to then help drive continuity of learning, but knowing no continuity of learning will take place if those other two aren't already fixed in how we're approaching the work.
Well, Nestor, we keep a glossary of terms here at Baltimore Positive. We had hatreds of indifference, hatreds of incompetence. I think we will be adding an urgent empathy to that list, because
I already wrote it down. That's how I was typing it. Anybody that was watching,
urgent empathy really catches. You know what?
Urgent empathy during the stressors of a pandemic. But she went to Harvard. This is what I'm here to learn. Okay,
there
I mean, I'm one student who's learning and getting communication via the new technology here. You should be proud of me as a city resident, Dr. Sanalis.
There will be taking copious notes. Well, you know, Dr. Sanalis, what I'm struck by, and again, I put my educator hat back on here, that's why I love talking with you, how many times today in your conference with those principals was the term "my kids" used?
Endless. And
right?
You know that, which is why you asked. Absolutely.
My kids.
That's what they're focused. That's right.
And a parent would say the same thing, Dr. Sanalis. And the one thing that befuddles me, I'm watching all this because my wife watches daytime TV, so I have seen every child crawl into every lap. Coach Billick, our partner, had his grandson in the lap doing NFL Network when Tom Brady signed a couple weeks. I mean, children are everywhere now on TV because people are working from home. My cat has been on with me. But parents as teachers, right? That is a different... I keep thinking if I have an eight and 11 year old homeschooling and what's going on in America and a lot of places where kids aren't going back. Do you have any advice, practical thought for anybody out there that is dealing with that? Because I don't think every parent's cut out to be a teacher, right? And I think every parent is realizing if they're trying to homeschool their child in any capacity at all and keeping this together, just what a professional looks like when a professional is a teacher. You mentioned new appreciation for things. I will think every parent will have that appreciation before this is over with.
No, I will agree, and I will tell you all a secret that I don't always say publicly prior to getting into educational leadership. My original intent was to homeschool our three girls, and then clearly life took a different
path.
You
took an easier job, obviously, right?
I took a much easier job, but I will tell you, as somebody who, and I'm very proud of the fact that I taught all three of my daughters to read, and they were trembling at the thought of, oh, God, now she is going to be the one teaching us, and we're going to have to do all this work.
Not her.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, my God, this is going to be 10 times harder than school, right? Because, you know, they know how I am. But I've got to tell you, Nestor and Don, they will tell you, they have given me much grace, you know, to try to continue to run a school system, right, with 80,000 students. You know, they give me grace, and I give them grace.
How old are your children? Tell everybody that doesn't know.
So I have one 14-year-old daughter and two twin 11-year-old daughters.
That's the easy stage, 11, 14 with girls, right? No problem, right?
It's pretty easy. Well, I will say my chief operating officer has 4 children under the age of 7, and I do not know how she's doing. It's amazing. We get to hear her toddlers over the phone when we're talking about sanitizing buildings. She's amazing.
Can I ask you one more dumb question before Don takes us to the fun? I have my Purell here. My wife's a 2-time leukemia survivor, and I've told this story because it is relevant to all of this. 6 years ago, she was diagnosed with leukemia, and they handed us masks and Purell, and they expressed to me, they made me think about it as this will date all 3 of us as being older, the boy in the bubble and John Travolta, and what her capacity to live through bacteria and germs. And I'm looking this up on the internet as a 45-year-old college-educated guy. You know, I mean, I don't feel like, I feel like I know a little bit about stuff, but I had a full education that had to come to me that I couldn't shake your hand 6 years ago. And I had Purell everywhere I went, and I had gloves, and I had a mask, and I had a rubber suit at various points at the low end of her journey, but I'm trying to think of how that relates to every single person in the population here who has watched this, and I said, this isn't for the people in Asia in the white suits from 2 months ago that look like something out of Willy Wonka. That's now here, and we're going to see that here, and keeping children clean, and I would always say 6 years ago, I would always say, kids are germ mongers, you know, and I can't touch you because you have a child that's in elementary school, and I went on this for 3 years when my wife was at various points of neutropenic and very, very vulnerable. And then even after her transplants, the fact that if I got her sick, she could wind up back in the emergency room. We've lived our lives like that for 6 years. I'm 52. The first 45 years, I was hugging and kissing and high-fiving and doing all of that stuff. We're in a different place, and especially my experience with sports, and I'll bring my WNST, is when football season happens in the Ravens facility, over the last 10 years, they have Purell at the front door in a squirt bottle, the same as the hospital always did at every entrance, everywhere. Tell me about what school looked like 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, Don, for you, as versus where we are and what we know about germs, even before this, as to children spreading germs. Because I've seen school districts get shut down for flu or shut down for whatever, mumps, measles, whatever those things would be. I'm assuming you know a lot about this and probably knew a lot about this before Wuhan 3 months ago, because that was also something in your playbook, which is, if all my kids get sick, we don't have a school, right?
No, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we did, you know, in full disclosure, we had to become much more vigilant about, for example, making sure there was soap in the dispensers. And so, you know, yes, there's Purell, but there's also just basic soap and water, right? And how do we continue to reemphasize that? So before school were closed, matter of fact, we have a great video that was made with young people kind of acting the roles of, these are the things you have to watch for. And so I think in the same way that you so wonderfully describe you and your wife's courageous journey and the way that you embraced that with a fervency, we've had to do the same thing. And I think, you know, things that we would brush aside there's no soap in that dispenser became really a matter of kind of life and death. Were we going to help to perpetuate the spread of this disease, or were we going to actually help stop it? Made, I think, school communities think very differently that, you know, again, if you don't have soap in the dispenser, okay, we'll change it 2 days from now or we'll wait for the shipment. And that became, you know, me at a board meeting saying, if you do not have soap, call the central office because we will bring you soap, because of exactly that revelation that you're talking about. And it absolutely has changed the way we do.
Again, it's that logistical officer approach. Before we get out of here, and again, you've been listening to Dr. Sonia Sanalisa, CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools, one of the heroes out there. She would tell you, along with her folks, she would give the credit away to the folks on the front line, but certainly school superintendents and CEOs navigating uncharted waters, I think, are worthy of all of our gratitude. Dr. Sanalisa, before we go, let's talk a little bit about where the rubber meets the road here. One of the things I hear from parents, and I see it all over social media, is they're panicking They're feeling inadequate. Their thought is, oh, my God, my child's going to lose 4 months of school. They'll never catch up. They'll never get into college. Their life as we knew it and planned it is over. I think that fear is real to them. What do you say to them?
What I say to them is we will push through this. Make sure, and again, this varies for different age groups, focus on maintaining skills. Like if you've got to do one thing, make sure, no matter how old your child is, that they're reading every day, even if it's for a little bit, right? That's a foundational skill that does not go away. Make sure they're doing some kind of math. And again, levels will vary based on families' ability to support that. But to the extent that we are now in a place that we haven't been before, let the focus be on maintaining the skills that you can support. You don't have to now become a fully certified teacher. Give yourself grace, which I said earlier. I've had to do it with my girls. Give yourself grace. And three, know that the entire country is wrestling with this. So places like the College Board have already granted some waivers, have already made accommodations. We're already at the state level talking about adjusting transcripts and things like that. So know that we are also concerned about futures. I've said in Baltimore City, our focus for technology right now is our juniors and our seniors in high school, because I don't want young people having gaps in their learning. So rest assured, absolutely keep surfacing your big questions, but give yourself grace, focus on the basics and maintaining academic skills. And then most importantly, make sure you're connected to your kids. Do not underestimate the family time together. You know, sure, if you're, you know, blessed enough and you can close doors and people are, you know, get some space away. My 14-year-old the other day said, I need a little time away. And I was like, great, have at it. Go to your room. We'll see you in 2 hours.
Sure.
Do
that.
That's
a lot of together time, and I'm sure, you know, it's interesting, Dr. Sinley, that you mentioned that. I said, amidst all of this stress, I do see story after story where moms and dads are saying, look, we can't sugarcoat this. This is difficult. But at the same time, they're saying, I've got to tell you, this ability to connect with my children in a different way is really pretty special, and I don't know that I'd want to do it for a couple of years at a time, but I have to tell you, it feels pretty good. Are you hearing that?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And again, you know, clearly there are families that, you know, that are experiencing challenges, but without a doubt, I'm seeing families walking more, you know, posts on social media about game night.
Seen TikTok videos that have been outrageous, right?
Oh, they have been fabulous.
Trapped families.
And you get a chance to develop skills. My girls have probably cooked more during the day in the last 2.5-3 weeks than they have the 2 or 3 years
right
prior. The time we're spending as a family, one of my younger daughters who admittedly does not like math very much has whipped our tail in Monopoly a couple of times already.
Mm-hmm.
And that time is time that in the fast pace of our world, we don't always get. So embrace the moments where you can, and again, give yourself grace. Like, okay, great. You had peanut butter 2 days in a row. Like, that's fine. Like, you know,
I'm eating ice cream every night. I'm proud of it, and I'm not going to apologize for it. How about that?
We'll be okay. We'll get through this. Real quick, the lightning round. What does curriculum delivery, and this is terrible to give you this as the lightning round, but what does curriculum delivery look like now for Baltimore City public school students? How are you all delivering the curriculum to them?
Yeah, so on that one, lightning round is with as many venues as possible. So we are using cable television because we know a lot of our families aren't connected. We use some emergency funding, as I referenced earlier, to purchase more Chromebooks targeted towards our high school students so that their coursework can continue. It looks like teachers at the high school level having Google Classroom sessions a couple of times a day. It means that we're able to post, and we're really thrilled about this, actually, because we partnered with our curriculum folks to post really great teaching that our teachers didn't have to do. Our curriculum partners did for us and took some of their best teachers. And we actually have people, parents from other counties who have called, who have previewed some of it and said, wow, this is great stuff. And we're launching that on Monday. And then to harken back to something that we talked about earlier, realizing that we have families that we are going to have to go out and find, that we're going to have to connect. And so we're working with Comcast, some of our local partners, to waive you know, overdue bills so that young people can get access to Wi-Fi. We've got low cost for some families that we know are vulnerable that we're picking up. But our curriculum and instruction people had no spring break. It was spring break in name only. They, Janice Lane, that team, they worked tirelessly to really put that together. We're working with the state for our adaptation for our special needs students. So it will look different. We will have time. We will have to make up. We are not getting the full course of instruction, but what we are committed to is providing standards aligned curriculum, learning opportunities for young people at the same time that we know we're going to have to plan to help fill some of the gaps from this time too. Was that a good lightning round, Don?
And I think that was, as I said, we're not supposed to have favorite children, but you know, privately, while nobody's listening, we'll say that we are indeed with one of our favorite Hall of Fame guests on Baltimore Positive. Real quick before we wrap it up, I know not everyone's connected. Not everyone has access to a computer. I know libraries are shut down, but they do have access to a computer. Best place for them to get information is BaltimoreCitySchools.org. Is that the best resource?
Yes, yeah. If you go to our website, literally you can't go now without the COVID health updates. And even within the health updates, you will see the links.
It's all right here. Yeah, meal sites, learning packets. It's
right.
One click, and it's very, very. I can figure it out, Doc. You know,
BaltimoreCitySchools.org. Dr. Santalisa, can't thank you enough. I hope we can impose upon you as this carries forward to have you back on again, because I think these updates for our citizens are vitally important. You're a good friend. We appreciate you taking the time, and I certainly wish you nothing but the best, so thank you very much.
I've said publicly the toughest job in the city, not the mayor. I think it's your job. So we'll continue to keep an eye on everything that's going on as we hopefully get through this together, and we appreciate the time.
No, I appreciate you all, too, for, you know, keeping the community informed, and, you know, thanks for all your prayers and well wishes and support. So thank you both, too.
And you forgot the most important thing. I got to tell everybody, wash your hands, okay? That's the most important thing, right?
That's right. Wash your hands and sanitize, right, Nestor?
I didn't even go to Harvard, and I figured that out. Dr. Sonia Santalisa is joining us here. We give her a hard time because she's from Boston. You know, the Red Sox and the Orioles, we don't have to worry about that this year, so there's no more of that. Don Moeller, of course, former Baltimore County Executive. Make sure you're checking out all of our sponsors at State Fair. Out in Catonsville, you can still get curbside there. Our friends at Fadley's, you can order crab cakes and ship them anywhere, and they're dying to send them to you because the crabs are going to be delicious. Springtime, the weather's breaking a little bit. You can still ship with Fadley's. Make sure you do that online. And, of course, Moeller and Gary Realty as well. Don Moeller's son, Jeff Moeller. It's going to be like all in the family ran here this week. We have his daughter, Jennifer Lynch, joining us. Dr. Lynch joining us to talk about elementary schools and education this week, as well as Dr. Darrell Williams joining us from Baltimore County, who has a similar role as Dr. Santalisa, and we're all in this thing together. For Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive, for all of our sponsors in Baltimore Positive and WNST.net, reminding everyone, keep calm, stay local, and stay Baltimore Positive.